back to Stand Up with Pete Dominic on Indy, SiriusXM 104.
All right, we are back, and we have two of the best healthcare experts for you to call and ask questions to. And that's the thing about this show. We don't need to worry about getting ratings and being provocative and creating divisive conversation constantly, which is really what radio and television does. You've got to have conflict. You've got to be divisive. I've always thought about this program since I created it. I have questions, and I want to talk to the people who have answers. So no matter what the issue is, we find the best experts we can, and hopefully they're articulate as well, and we bring them on the air for you to ask questions, for me to ask questions, and for all of us to stand up together and learn more about these issues. And that's what we've got right now. Dr. Aaron Carroll and Austin Fracht. Are you a doctor? Do you have a PhD, Austin?
I have a PhD in electrical engineering.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I did, but... Yes.
Can you look at the wiring in this studio?
Right. It's electrical engineering. I came out of the electrical engineering department at MIT, but I did statistical image and signal processing, which is just math. I just did a lot of math. I'm a math guy. And physics. Physics undergrad.
What do you think happens when you die?
I don't know.
Come on.
Rot. You rot. You rot a lot.
Do you believe,
unless they burn you.
Do you have any... Who are they?
Your family.
Do you have any kind of spiritual underpinning?
Any spiritual understanding? Probably, yeah.
Probably.
Do you believe that in the next several decades we'll be able to upload our consciousness onto cloud servers?
That would be awesome.
And then therefore we'll achieve...
You can't do that yet?
But if we can't feel that that's our consciousness, will it be our consciousness?
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm pro-implant the chip.
Is there anything large enough to fill the hole in my heart?
No. I'll give you something to fill it with.
Wow. We want to talk about... I felt like maybe we should take a moment to inform people on what Obamacare does. Let's just do 2 minutes on that, and then I'll go right back to James. So, guys, what is Obamacare? I'll try to give my nine-second explanation. It expands Medicaid, and then it also creates these exchanges so that people that don't have insurance through their employer or elsewhere... can now get it on an individual market, because now a whole bunch of people are going to be in that, so that makes it lucrative to insurance companies, as opposed to when I was a lonely stand-up comedian, I couldn't get any affordable health insurance. And, of course, it puts a ton of regulations on insurance companies. So it doesn't really do enough to bring down the cost of care, but it definitely does a lot to provide more access and more affordable health insurance. How'd I do?
That's not terrible. It's not terrible at all. I think the major thrust of the law is to try to reduce the number of uninsured. It's to say the people who are left who don't have insurance, it tries to expand Medicaid and regulate health insurance in such a way that that everybody can try to at least get insurance. It does it by, with the idea that everybody should be able to get insurance. You can't be denied. Even if you're sick, you shouldn't have to pay a ton of money. If you do that, of course, we've talked about it. It provides an adverse incentive for healthy people not to buy insurance. We need to incentivize them to get insurance. That's the mandate. If you force people to buy something, you got to help them pay for it. That's the subsidies. That's how it works. The idea is to reduce the number of uninsured. There are other things in the law which do other things, trying to bend the curve of cost in the future. We will see how that works. There's other changes to insurance to help protect people. So there's no annual limits. There's no lifetime limits. Insurance has to be certainly comprehensive at this point. So there's a lot of other bells and whistles. But the big, big thing is trying to reduce the number of uninsured, giving them an opportunity either to get Medicaid or go buy.
And yet there will still be 20 million uninsured Americans. Also.
Well, yes, except it's there'll be 20 million people in the country who'll be uninsured. A lot of them will be undocumented immigrants.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, but see, this is where I would – this is – and again, I don't think it's okay.
So it'll just be Mexicans.
I don't think it's okay, but people would bristle. I think some of your audience might say, if you say there's 20 million Americans, the question is, of course, that this could, of course, be fixed by Congress if they get around to it. The qualifications of Americans are not – the people living in this country, a large percentage of the uninsured in the future are going to be the undocumented.
And it's a weird, weird, stupid –
In some states, it'll be poor people because they didn't expand Medicaid.
That too.
Because they didn't expand – right,
yeah.
In Texas.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Austin, just on the immigrant thing, and then I'll go back to James here, who I asked to hang on. It's a dumb thing to not offer health insurance to illegal or undocumented immigrants, because they can buy anything else. They can buy cigarettes. They can buy food. They can buy anything else. And we want them. I want illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants, aliens, whatever you want to call them, pejorative names. I want them to buy this, because if they don't buy insurance – then we're going to all be affected by them using the ER and getting around it. So the idea that they can't buy insurance as a healthcare economist, to me, that sounds like a bad idea. That made it sound like I was the healthcare economist. You're the healthcare economist. It sounds like a bad idea for economics for to prevent illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants, to be able to buy health insurance.
I mean, the main reason for insurance is access to care. And the reason why you'd want people to do that is really, it's more humanitarian and justice.
Well, fine. Forget about morality, though.
Okay.
Just in terms of economy. I mean, obviously that for me. But as far as economics, I mean, if they don't have insurance and preventative care and they get it through the ER, and doesn't that affect the rest of us?
I mean, actually, it is more expensive to insure people and have them use preventative care than not. The cheapest way, the cheapest thing you can do is have people die young. Right? I mean, in terms of the healthcare costs, because then you're not paying for all their chronic care and what happens when they get older and so on and so forth. But, you know, of course, there is a drag on the economy if everyone died. You want them to, like, work and buy things and so forth. But basically, in terms of healthcare costs, you know, it's more expensive for preventative care in general. But the reason you do it is because it's good for people. I mean, people are happier, they're healthier, they can work, they can lead fulfilling lives. And, that's why we're doing it. I don't buy, and I think it's not true. I mean, studies have shown it's generally not true that you're going to save a lot of money by providing people care they need. You're going to make them healthier. That's the reason you do it.
And sometimes good things cost money.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to James in New Jersey. James.
Hi. Here's my question. Let's say on a typical tax year, when you do your taxes, you get a $1,000 refund.
Uh-huh.
Now you're signing up for the exchanges,
yep,
and you're qualified for a $3,000 tax credit.
Yep.
So now when you do your taxes, you already got a $3,000 tax credit. Does that affect your tax refund, saying you don't get that refund anymore because we already gave you a
$3,000? Refunds are not credits. Refunds are not credits. They're different things. It's like the difference between – see, when we talk about deductions, and that applies to refunds, you, of course, can only deduct up until what you make. So deductions are not worth much to poor people who don't pay much in taxes, if anything. So deductions – now, credits – you get the credit no matter what. If you pay $0 in income tax, if you get it doesn't matter. You're getting a credit is like just getting free money from the government.
Okay. Well, here's my one criticism. Actually, I got a few concerns. Anyway, those who could afford it the least are still sort of in a bad situation. I'll give you my own situation. My gross income is about $24,000.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep a roof over my head, $10,000 a year for rent. Then I have to pay another $1,000 for car insurance because the state says I have to have insurance to drive a car. So there's nearly half of my pay just going to keep a roof over my head and car insurance. Now, even with the subsidies, the silver plan is going to cost me over $100 a month. Yeah. That ain't going to happen. I don't even have a cell phone. Let's put it that way. I can't afford a cell phone. So,
What state do you live in?
New Jersey.
Okay.
Which is the highest, one of the highest states to live in as far as
Do you mind if I ask your zip code?
0700.
Are you single? You have a family.
Single. Okay. So I don't qualify
no
for
dependents.
Medicaid is out.
How old are you?
63.
Okay.
I just got to hang on another 2 years. Okay. I haven't seen a doctor since 1966. So I had my appendix taken out back then. Anyway, here's the thing. If I go for the bronze plan, which is about all I'm going to be able to afford.
Yes.
That plan has the highest deductibles. Even if I still can't afford to get sick, because where am I going to get the?
I'm not going to argue. Your zip code you said was 07003.
Yeah.
Okay, and you make $24,000.
Yeah.
So I just went to the Kaiser calculator, and where you live, you could buy a bronze plan for about $178 a year.
Fine, really? But as I said though,
that's a year. No, I get that, but here's the thing:
a year.
So,
holy cow.
So this is the thing. You're worried about what it's going to cost if you get sick, if you buy the bronze plan for $178 a year. It will still cost you that much. It'll cost you way more if you get sick and you have nothing.
One visit.
That's true.
Okay, nothing. So you're going to owe way more if you have no insurance. Even if you have some insurance, it's going to be massively better. It's $178 a year. That's what? $1.50 a month? $15 a month? $15 a month? $15 a month. And you could have insurance that has an actuarial value of 60%, meaning at least it'll cover 60% of your expenses. Hopefully you won't get sick. You'll be out $15 a month. But if you do get sick, 60% of that's going to be gone, and at least you'll be protected with major maximums.
You can get
so you won't owe hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you get preventive care for free.
Yeah.
You get preventive care for free.
Yeah, that's
that's worth $178.
Yeah, so $178, you get all the preventive care for free.
63 and hasn't seen a doctor since.
I think it's terrible, but I'm saying this is
the peak of the Vietnam War.
All I did was I went onto the Kaiser subsidy calculator. I plugged in you live in New Jersey and the zip code, and it's like, and I went down. Now the silver plan, you're right, costs more. The silver plan would cost you $1,587 a year, it says. But the bronze, you could enroll in a bronze plan for about $178 a year.
That's amazing.
Well, that went up. When I checked that,
a year?
It was 60, no, I mean, when I checked that same Kaiser plan a few days ago, and it said $61 a year.
Oh, they just updated it. It said $61 a year, and you were upset about that?
No, I wasn't upset about it. I was just saying...
James, you got to scrounge up
the difference between a bronze plan and a silver plan is only 10% of actuarial value. It's like it's like it goes from 60% to 70%. So it's not like, you know, it's better, but if you're, you know, it's not like it's all the difference in the world.
Is it Tavon or Tavon? Tavon, New York. I'm going to say Tavon. Oh, somebody just picked them up. What just happened? Oh, bye, Tavon. He hung up. Dwayne is in Utah. Dwayne, turn off your radio and go ahead with Austin Fracht and Aaron Carroll, two of the best healthcare experts in the country, in studio, all 3 hours. You're on the air. Go ahead, Dwayne. All right, let's go to
Bye,
Brett.
Bye, Dwayne.
I knew the answer to that one, though.
Yeah, it was
the answer.
Brett, North Carolina.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, Brett.
I love the discussion. I come from a background both insurance and I'm in healthcare now, and I think. I got really bristled when I was listening to your discussion about the undocumented, immigrants in the country getting the health care. And I think that's the next step to this, is that as long as you have free coverage when somebody walks into an emergency department or, you know, into a hospital, whether they have coverage or not, and you're forced legally to provide that care, you know, there's no incentive for people to have the insurance because they're always gonna be there. So if you take away that certain, and I know it's inhumane, but if you say, look, we don't have to legally provide you care unless you have a coverage mechanism, then that will eliminate the naysayer that we had earlier in the conversation that says, well, just out of spite, I'm not gonna have coverage, because then he has a choice. He can get an affordable coverage program. But he just has to, if he chooses not to do it on his own accord, then he'll have to pay cash when he does need the system.
Yeah, so there's a few things going on here. One is that, you know, everybody thinks that when you go and you go to the emergency room for care, that somehow that they have to provide it for you and it's free. Nothing could be further from the truth. They will bill you.
Yeah,
they will hound you from now until the end of time. I've written on the blog numbers of times of hospitals that literally will start hounding people when they show up in the ER before they get seen about money that they owe. They'll attack your income. They will bankrupt you. We recently had to take our kid to the ER. All he got was an ultrasound and saw a doctor. It was $6,000. I would never want to do that if I didn't have to. Most people wouldn't. And thank goodness I had insurance, which covered the vast majority of it. I think that bill is insane. But if I didn't have insurance, they'd charge me $6,000 or more. And they would hound me forever until they got their money. So this idea that they're just going to magically go. No, there's a huge incentive to get insurance so that you don't owe that $6,000. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that you can't get all the care you need in an ER. They only have to provide you if you are basically in labor, if you're having a baby, or if you're in danger of like losing an organ or losing your life. Otherwise, they absolutely can legally turn you away, and they will. And if not, you still can't get your diabetes meds in the ER. You can't get your asthma check in the ER. You can't get a screening colonoscopy or a mammogram in the ER. You can't get your depression management in an ER or management for your kid's ADHD or autism or developmental screening. You know, I could list to speak forever on the stuff you can't get in an ER. ER is not healthcare, and there is no free healthcare for the vast majority of people. So this sort of myth that, oh, well, as long as people can go to the ER, it's all going to be safe or it's all going to be free or there's no incentive. That's just not true. And it's the one of the thing that it never applies to us. It's always some other mythical apocryphal person who's going to do this. Regular people don't do this. They don't sit and go, hey, it's going to be fine. I'll just go to the ER when I get sick.
Brett, I got to move on. Are you good?
Yeah, good.
All right. Thank you. Chuck called, I think, this week earlier and said, that's my dad.
Woo!
Oh, that's my dad. Okay, here we go. It says Chuck in New York. Pete told him to call. That's my dad. I don't know why you called
the normal number. You are Pete.
Well, I texted my dad. I said, can you call in with your question? Hey, Dad.
You yourself in the third person.
Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. You up? Are you awake?
I am wide awake. Your mother heard a buzz, so I came down. I got a text message, which is pretty incredible for me at 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't usually get them, but here I am, son.
All right. Did you have your decaf yet?
No. No.
Do you ever drink caffeinated coffee?
Warming it up. I can take just so much caffeine, and then I have to kill somebody. So I stay
away. Okay. Well, not your wife. Not your wife.
Not. Don't kill mom.
I just bite people's heads off.
Wow. And I've seen that, actually. It was a gas station attendant in New Jersey in 1984.
Nice.
Nice guy, too. Feel sad for his family. All right, Dad. Here's the deal. I just wanted you to be on the air while we got to the question that you sent from your accountant, who is a huge Bill O'Reilly fan. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. The following – now, to be fair, I gave this. I sent this to both my guests, Austin Fratt and Dr.
Aaron Carroll. But I didn't read it because I don't read any of your emails.
Oh, okay. Well, this one came from my dad. I thought you would have read it.
But still just said from Pete. So.
Oh, all right. Well, he says the following – this is my dad's accountant, Jim. We'll call him Jim because that's his name. The following is a real life scenario. Some numbers in here, so I can get easily confused, but you guys saw this. So he says, we have a client that has six separate businesses under common ownership. It's our understanding that businesses under common ownership must be aggregated for the purposes of the healthcare penalty tax responsibility payment. On a good year, the businesses operate at a net profit of $200,000 to $300,000 per year combined. Each business employs approximately 25 full-time employees and approximately 20 part-time employees. There are 140 full-time employees, 100 part-time employees combined. The annual payroll is between $6 and $7 million. Question, does the employer have at least 50 full-time equivalent employees? Yes. Does the employer offer coverage to its workers? Not all its workers. They cover about 30 at 100%. So if one employee receives a premium tax credit or cost subsidy in an exchange, the employer is subject to a $2,000 penalty annually times the number of full-time employees minus 30. There are 140 full-time employees less the excluded 30, which are coincidentally already receiving insurance for the 110. 110 times 2,000 equals $220,000. This penalty or tax or responsibility payment, whatever you want to call it, is non-deductible. It's also my understanding that the penalty amount may change at the discretion of the secretary each year. I think it's practical to assume under the current political climate that penalty will rise each year. So in this scenario, it's entirely possible that our client's annual profit would be eliminated. The profit would be eliminated as a result of this penalty or tax. The value of our client's business will be impacted by the reduction in cash flow, of course, and the scenario puts our client's business in jeopardy, as well as the jobs of nearly 240 people. At the very minimum, we must advise them to turn as many full-time employees to part-time as possible. And this transformation of the workforce will have its own separate set of administrative costs. I think it's also practical to consider that as the regulations to the law continue to be drafted, they will fix this part-time worker scenario and apply the penalty to full-time equivalents.
There's a lot of things to say about that. Actually, I have a question though. Do we know anything about these? What kind of businesses are they? What do they produce?
Do we know anything about their businesses, Dad? The businesses that these
service goods, widgets.
I believe they didn't tell me what it was, but they said. Well, let me put it this way. They said we have several businesses in this similar situation.
No, but again, I think what Austin's getting at is sort of like, do we know what they do? Because are they the only sort of employer in the industry locally that doesn't give insurance, or does no one give insurance, or does everybody else give insurance?
I think that this man owns several restaurants.
Okay.
Oh, this is perfect. Yeah. Restaurants is good. So
now, wait. It could be a guy who owns a nursing home, because
that's fine.
That works too. Situation. We just were curious if it was like something.
I'll tell you why that's relevant. Nursing homes and restaurants have no international competition, right? You go to a restaurant, you're not going to China. You're going downtown, right? The reason this is relevant is all the competition that this individual has for his business is local. That means they're all in the same market. That means they're all in the same boat with respect
to
the...
No, they are not.
But they have to... A restaurant must compete locally with other restaurants that are local.
No, they all have to do the following.
No. Gentlemen,
I don't know whether to cut you
right now. Let's say this is a restaurant. There are restaurants in this city,
yeah.
lots of restaurants, most of them who employ between 20 and 30 or 40 employees. Now, how does that...
That's okay.
That's okay. That's not where he's getting to.
My point is that every business that he competes with has to, you know, they want to maximize profit, they want to minimize costs. So it makes sense for this individual to do the lowest cost thing he can do. That may be, like it was alluded to, that may be turning some people into part-time. It may be splitting up the company in a way that gets around this law so it's a smaller business and comes underneath it. There are lots of things that could happen. But the point is he wants to minimize costs and therefore is competing in a market where other people are subject to all the same rules. And it is true. There might have to be some response to this. Now, another response beyond paying the penalty that as was described is to provide health insurance for these individuals. Now, that will cost something. But the cost could be passed along to the individuals. It could be passed along to the individuals entirely, in which case it would be so costly for them, they'd all run to the exchanges, and then there's a penalty for that. But it may be lower. I don't know. You have to do the calculation. But if he pays some of those costs himself, it would be tax deductible. So the point is, there's a lot more work that's to be done to see what's the lowest cost.
If he pays some of the costs himself, it would be tax deductible
for health insurance.
Yes.
Yeah.
How does the accountant not address that?
Well, it even gets more complicated. It's like at some point, it's like, in other words, even if we say they are forced to provide insurance, their local competitors are not. Well, then they're providing a much better job. They'll theoretically have much better employees because wouldn't the employees flock to that job that was giving out health insurance versus the one that's not? They'd have less turnover. They'd have higher retention, which would lower their costs in other very expensive ways. I mean, well, expensive to the other companies, and they would benefit from there. The account's only analyzing one aspect of this. There is no penalty in the world right now, none. No job is forced to provide insurance, and yet the vast majority of Americans get their insurance from their jobs. Why? Because that's how you retain high-quality employees. That's how you get good people and retain them and keep them and not have high turnover. Companies that don't provide insurance are often left with bad employees and fail. So with no penalty, most people provide insurance. With some penalty, all of a sudden there's not this incentive they would start dropping insurance. And if you don't believe me, the only thing you need to do is look at Massachusetts, where these exact same arguments were made right before that law was passed. And they said in Massachusetts, everyone will go to part-time. The number of employees will go down. The exact opposite happened. More companies actually started providing insurance. Insurance provided by companies went up, not down, and all the predictions turned out to be false.
Anyway, another really important point to this is that these exact penalties we're talking about have been delayed for a year. This conversation doesn't even have to happen right now. It can happen in a year. A lot can happen in a year. I disagree that the political winds are going to force it to be more stringent. I think actually there's a chance that this may just go away, or the part-time thing will go up to 40 hours instead of 30 hours. You know, there's lots of things that may happen. So and it's all a year away, more than a year away.
So no matter what, it's a year away.
Yeah, we don't even have to worry about it right
for
now.
For this guy's situation. What about the point that in this scenario, can you see any way that in this scenario, it's entirely possible that our client, this accountant's client, his annual profit would be eliminated as a result of the penalty?
I think he'll change in order so that's not the case. I mean, if he has to split up his business so that each independent part is not subject to it, so he's better able to compete in the market against these smaller restaurants that he's competing with. He may have to do that, or he may have to find a lower cost way of doing it, which may be to provide some form of insurance and pay for just enough of it, you know, to get a tax benefit and pass the cost on to
yeah.
I'll go back
to like even the Papa John's thing, you know, some time ago, where they vocally complained that this insurance was going to affect their payroll, that they have tons of employees, local restaurants, they were going to compete. It was going to raise the price of a pizza. 11 cents, okay? If the price of pepperoni went up because of a pepperoni shortage and the price of pizza went up 11%, they wouldn't even open their mouth. They would just do it.
But that's the point you're making, though, about the restaurant point, which is they might have to raise their prices
11 cents.
This guy, but so would everybody else in town.
Well, I think your dad is making the argument that like if a small pizza place just didn't have to qualify because they only had 10 employees, and then they wouldn't have to raise. But if we're talking, you know, everybody's bitching, 11 cents on a pizza. It's like if that's really what it costs to retain high quality workers and do that, I bet they save tons of money in other ways.
And based on the numbers you gave, I recognize this is the entire profit, but it's actually 3% of payroll. Payroll is like 6 million, and this is only 200,000. So this is like
Yeah, that's interesting, Dad. The payroll is annual payroll is between 600,000 and 700,000.
I thought it was million. I think
it's six million and $7 million.
So 200,000 is right? 3%.
Yeah, so he's
and so you can raise prices by a whopping 3%, which is like inflation. I mean, it's a little, but
pretty robust answer, Dad. Any other questions or points? Or?
Well, you know, you're talking about this guy should split up his business.
Nope, I never said that.
I did. Okay, I said if it was possible,
yeah,
it's
Austin. Said, Austin did. Sorry, Austin did.
And the businesses are split. I know the accountant. He's my accountant. He's also my partner. So
life partner.
He's pretty sharp. These are real numbers. So splitting up his business, they've already advised the guy to do that probably 10 years ago.
Well, maybe it makes even more sense now, perhaps.
Well, they're already split, but what the government says is they will combine them. So it doesn't matter. You can split them up. They're already split into six.
That's not true, because what if he owned businesses that didn't even do the same industry? What if he had, like, you know, if he owned two restaurants that had completely different goals, aims, places? That's just not true. There's absolutely a way to keep them split.
There has to be a way.
They are split.
No. I mean, even in the eyes of Obamacare, there has to be a way to keep them split. It might be harder. It might require, like, management differences and everything else, but you can do it.
It's common ownership.
That will then change that.
You have to incorporate in a different way.
Yeah, you have to incorporate.
I'm sure there's a way.
I mean, we're not accountants and we can figure this out. There has to be a way to...
They're all corporations now. I know you're not accountants, but believe me, the guys that are accountants that we're talking to, they know.
But given the information that even I can, if the annual payroll debt is between $6 and $7 million,
I can't argue with an accountant who's not here.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, I just can't do it. And it's also, it's like
I wouldn't.
Is there an accountant listening?
My dad thinks this accountant's the Lord Jesus. He's the greatest accountant of all time. But I've always thought this guy. I've never really.
We can tweet out this question.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love for him to call. Why don't you tell him to call right now?
Well, first of all, gentlemen, we're talking about three CPAs that I was sitting with having lunch with.
Okay? I sit with heads of insurance companies that don't know how this law
works.
The
point I'm making is that the entire firm, not the entire firm, but the three CPAs from this firm all agreed on this.
They all agree that they're confused about the law. These guys are confused about how the law works. They're confused. They shouldn't be. Because they're CPAs.
The bottom line is...
That they're confused?
The penalty is more... than the corporate profit. Bad. That's bad.
But it's not, based on the figures you're giving me.
They have to raise their prices then in order to get more. It's like they'll have to raise their price. No one is arguing that they will have to change their
business. Less than
3%. The world changes.
Less than 3%. They have to raise their prices 3%.
Well, I don't know what it is, and I'm not giving you a number and everything else. But they will have to adapt to a changing world in order to remain competitive. That is every business in the universe.
Aaron, thank you very much for that advice. I will tell my CPA.
Why don't you tell him to call right now?
No.
Why not?
He's not here. Okay. Listen. Here's what I'm going to tell.
I didn't think he was there.
That you're.
He's not at your house.
No, he's not at my house. No.
It's less than 3%.
It's less than 3%.
Correct. And that all they have to do.
No, because here's the thing.
To raise their prices, and this is a good law. Okay. All right.
No, I don't think it's a good law because they have to raise their prices.
The law was not passed
to keep their prices
down. My dad
down.
Desperately wants to believe his accountant more than you.
My accountant. Nobody's arguing with what my accountant said. I mean, you're all agreeing.
I'm just saying he has to raise prices 3%. And everything's fine.
You're all agreeing that his – I thought he was off base when he gave me this example. I really did.
He is.
What you're telling me is he is correct. And that theoretically,
is that what you guys are saying? That
I don't know because I still think there's probably a way they could change their business model structure. They wouldn't be.
I'm willing for the sake of argument. I don't know that this is the lowest cost way, and there's no other way out. Let's just say I don't believe that, but let's just say for the sake of argument. And I'm saying the way out is raise prices by probably less than 3% because payroll is the biggest part of the cost, but it's not all of their costs, especially in the restaurant industry. And you're talking about a cost that's 3% of payroll, so raise prices. It's probably I'll just make a guess. Say it's 2%. So a restaurant meal under this company would be 2% higher than you cover the penalty. Done. I don't think anybody's going to not go to this restaurant because prices are 2% higher. I think they go to the restaurant because they like the experience and they're willing to
pay. I don't think anybody would notice.
Maybe they'll take a little out of the tip, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Tips will probably go up because they're just a percentage of whatever they're charging.
And as you said at the very beginning, so would the rest of the locality.
And everyone else who had to follow the same exact rules would be doing this.
So I want to know if this – I would want to know if this individual can raise prices 2% or he thinks that will put him out of business. Done. Shut it down.
Okay. Here's my question. This is my question.
Raise it 1%. Split the difference.
I haven't followed anything about employers because I'm not an employer. Their penalty is $2,000 per employee.
That's not the
cost of insurance.
No, they could also choose to provide insurance, which might
now,
cost.
How much would the insurance be if they bought it?
Well, they need to figure that out. But let's say they. Well, no, but see, this is again.
You guys are giving my accountant advice, so why don't you figure it out? Because let's.
Well, we can give you numbers.
If you didn't cut me off, I was going to. Let's say insurance costs. I'm making up a number here. I was going to say 4,000. That's probably what you get on the exchange.
Before tax deductions. Yeah.
$4,000 before the tax deduction per employee.
Wipe out half of it on taxes.
Half of it. You're going to charge the employee's premiums for it, and you can charge them up to 9.5% of their income. So maximize
that
out.
Yeah, to keep them out of the exchange.
Right, to keep them out of the exchange. So figure out what their percentage is. Figure out what you are owed left. Take out your tax deduction. Multiply it by the number of employees and figure out if that is more than the penalty. And if it turns out it is more, add in that you're going to be attracting much higher quality employees because you're giving them insurance and make the decision. These are just, you could do this in minutes.
We'll take this conversation. We'll give it to your accountant and whatever further questions he has.
Right, I have another question.
I'm out of time, but go ahead.
Don't they have to buy family insurance? That's my
Nope. Because what they have to offer them is individual insurance. That is not the case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there are companies that don't offer family insurance.
Yes.
That's fine.
They only have to offer them individual. It'd be nice if they offered them family, but they only have to offer individual.
Okay.
All right, Pop. Thank you very much. We'll give this to your accountant, and then maybe he can tell us what the industry, what kind of businesses they are, and we can do more with it. Be happy to do that.
I will do that.
For Jim.
Thank you very much.
Okay. All right, Jim.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Jim.
Bye.
I mean, I'm taking that. My dad's name is Chuck, but thank you to Jim for submitting this.
Well, I'm thanking your dad.
Now I realize that.
It's a good question.
Yeah, it's a great question.
That's why a lot of businesses are thinking
about
it.
That's why I took it so long, not only because it's my dad and it's his accountant. That I desperately want to debunk this, but because I think there's a lot of confusion there with businesses and business owners. Tina in Texas, you're on Stand Up right now. This is the great Tina.
I think she may be your biggest fan or the biggest fan of the show.
Has she been on before?
She's an amazing person.
She's
amazing person.
Yes.
She takes care of her mom who's got dementia. Is it her son Tina, daughter who has autism? And lives in Texas and doesn't have insurance. Is that right, Tina?
That's right. I had stage 3 breast cancer.
And she had stage 3 breast cancer.
I know.
And we were self-employed to, you know, paying for our own insurance. And after my cancer and my daughter's seizure disorder, our rates went so high that we just couldn't afford them. It was our family of four with a $5,000 deductible per person. Within about 22 months after my diagnosis, our rates went from about $750 a month up to almost $1,800 a month, and we just couldn't afford it. And my ex-husband dropped the policy, not realizing that with the pre-existing conditions, there would be pretty much no way to insure me again other than the high-risk pool, which in Texas for my age was still going to be just for me. About $760 a month with, of course, you know, the typical.
So the point is Tina knows as well as any American.
And that's, yeah, you guys.
Because of her issues, her kids and her mom's, the cost and the experience and the frustration. So, and she's an amazing, amazing woman. Listen to the show and on Twitter and everybody loves Tina. And she's on Twitter at TM Winsett, and people should follow her because she's taken in a lot of media and really smart and a great follow on Twitter. Anyway, Tina, your question for Dr. Carroll and Austin Fracht, I can say Dr. Fracht as well, because they are the two foremost healthcare experts in the country, two of the.
I specialize in vasectomies.
And he specializes in vasectomies, of which I had last week.
That was Austin.
So. Go ahead, Tina.
There's a Forbes article that was recently out by Chris Conover that the headline for it is Obamacare will increase health spending by $7,450 for a typical family of four.
Yes.
A tad misleading, I think, in the headline, because that covers a 7-year period.
That's not typical either. That's right. Just all, it's misleading in only 5,000 ways. But go on.
Okay, and that's why I had the author did respond to my tweets, and we had a little bit of a back and forth.
I did see that.
The article's still completely confused. I mean, it just.
This is what he did. It's like, so he basically said, this is how much Obamacare is going to cost in the next decade, or was it whatever number of years. And then he divided it by the number of people in America and said, now this is how much your health costs are going to increase. And he multiplied it by four for a typical family of four. That would be like saying how much did the Iraq war cost? I don't know what it was.
It will cost eventually $6 trillion.
$6 trillion. We divide it by the number of people in the United States, multiply it by four, and say this is what it cost you for war. Like that's
did
not
I say
how,
trillion? I meant billion.
Whatever it is. No, it's trillion.
Is it trillion?
Oh, my God, it's trillion. It's well over definitely. A trillion. That's not – what is typical? In other words, that's not how it works. Taxes are not paid typically. Some people pay way more in taxes than others. That's what it will cost taxpayers in money. That's not distributed equally over the United States. It's distributed way more towards the people at the high end of the socioeconomic spectrum. So some people at the very high end of the socioeconomic spectrum are going to pay quite a bit in taxes and Medicare taxes and other fees and other stuff in order to pay for the insurance that's being spread out over the United States of America. But that's how every activity in the United States works. They're all sort of paid for by one end of the spectrum and then distributed equally. Well, theoretically, that's how it works. But it's not a healthcare cost. It's not the cost of your insurance. That's the cost of taxes and everything else. And to then say it's paid for equally by everyone is not true. It's totally disingenuous. It's not paid anything like typically. Plus, it doesn't at all account for the fact about how much health insurance might have gone down because of slowing the curve in the future, if that works, or benefits you might receive in terms of subsidies. Lots of things are going to occur at the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum that aren't included in analysis, and the stuff that he does include won't hit the low end of the socioeconomic spectrum. So it is just not a reasonable or good way to look at how we spend money in the United States. It's not meaningful. I don't know if Austin has anything to add.
Yeah, not all of the cost of the law is paid for through taxes. A lot of it is, but some of it is paid for by cuts in the Medicare program, cuts payments to hospitals, payments to the private plans that participate in Medicare. So there's some redistribution of healthcare spending across the system as part of the law. The reason he wrote the whole premise of that piece that Chris Conover did is that, unfortunately, and I'm going to attack the president a little bit here, the president has said that everyone's health insurance or cost of care will go down, or each family's will go down by $2,500 a year. I think that was a unfortunate thing to say. There is a very narrow, technical, nuanced way in which you could defend it, but nobody's going to understand that way, and I don't even want to try. I just think it's silly. Cost of care is not going to go down for $2,500 per family due to this law. I mean, nobody's going to believe that. Nobody's going to be able to see that. It's just so. Sure. What Chris is saying is, well, you know, if we're going to interpret it that as what's going to happen, then look, no, it's not true. We can run the numbers another way, and we'll get a totally different answer. And I think both of these exercises are just silly exercises. Both obscure so many nuances and details that it's just meaningless.
So for the average person, if they hit you with, I'm reading this article in Forbes by a business guy who says every family is going to have to pay that. It's just the simple answer is just to come back and say that's an aggregate of the entire country's cost of health care going up.
Yeah, they come to your house and ask you for like $30,000 to pay for the Iraq war? No.
Right.
It's not evenly distributed.
It's like saying
American.
The average American's income is $75,000 because, you know, there's so many really, really wealthy people, they pull the average up. No, the more typical, if you want to use the word typical, you want to look at the median or someone in the middle who's typical in this case is someone who's going to go on an exchange, or, you know, newly covered people, or a lot of them get subsidies. So really, I think the typical person who's affected by the law is not going to be, you know, hit with anything like that. It's going to be much smaller.
I have nothing to add.
That's a first.
Tina, I love you. Thank you.
I love you too. Thank you guys so much. I just came and say how much you've helped me understand all this. And
you're very sweet.
All this. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Tina. All right, let's take a break, our only break in this hour, one an hour here on Stand Up, and we will come back with more of your questions. And I'm really looking for the haters, the criticism. What do you not like about this law? What are you afraid of? What are your concerns? And we'll help you with them. They'll help you with them. I'll sit here and I'll watch the two best healthcare experts in the country, according to me, help you. And I will also eat a Boston cream donut during that. So give us a call and join the conversation. The phone number is 866-994-6343. If you're not following Aaron Carroll and Austin Fracht on Twitter, you should be at Aaron E. Carroll and at A Fracht, F-R-A-K-T. What is that? Fracht.
Hmm. Oh, it has Lithuanian origin.
Oh, really? And well, get out.
I actually have a post about my name if you want to look for it on the Incidental Economist. But it has meaning in Swedish as freight or cargo. If you go to IKEA, you will see Fracht.
That's the only place. Sound like a piece of IKEA furniture.
Yeah,
I think I have a stool called Fracht.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. It means freight, cargo. Yep.
And I named one of my stools after you.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Austin Fracht, Aaron Carroll, and a weird, awkward moment for Alfred Schultz as he grimaces at my jokes. We'll be right back.
He's no nonsense, speaks his mind, says what you're thinking, and other horrible cliches. Stand Up with Pete Dominic.
Indy, Sirius XM 104.
All right, we are back, and we want to just take just a moment. I yield to Dr. Aaron Carroll.
You can go first.
I'll go first. My daughter may be listening, so Julia, I hope you're listening. Happy birthday! She's 6 years old today, my daughter. Happy birthday, Julia.
And my lovely wife's birthday is tomorrow. And if Amy is listening, she's more than six, but still very, very young. Happy birthday, Amy.
And Austin, did you want to say hi to your kids? I'm sure they're SiriusXM subscribers.
I just called them on the phone, and but I'll say hi to them here in case they listen. We'll post the audio, right?
Yeah, I should also say if Noah's in the car going to get his throat swabbed, and I hope he's not faking sick because Daddy's away, I'm saying hi to Noah.
He does
too.
That?
Is Noah more likely to fake sick when you're not there?
But Noah just happens to get sick more than I'm not there. I cannot accuse him of faking it because it could be very real. And Noah, if you're listening, Daddy believes you.
Are these sicknesses in any way correlated to the trips to the Indiana State Fair?
No. That my kids are hardy. Food does not affect them. But somehow someone, I feel like they pass a baton. Every time I travel, it's like, whose turn is it? My turn? Someone gets sick.
Is it Noah or Jacob who broke his
Noah.
Arm?
No, it was foot.
It was his foot, and you said, walk it off, he's fine.
Yes.
As opposed to my daughter, who I was easily able to diagnose her broken bone.
Oh, did I not tell you to take her to the ER, though? I did say take her to the ER.
You did, but that's another one where we haven't talked about it, where I felt like you weren't there enough.
What?
Like, I wanted you to constantly be
calling
and asking me how she's doing.
I did.
She had surgery.
You lie.
And you're...
You lie. I have so many texts proving that I kept checking in to see how she's doing, saying, call me if you need anything. If you need me to talk to the doctors, I will.
Eric Siegel told me Professor Eric Siegel told me he's contacted you a couple times.
He has. He sent me
kids.
Pictures of his kids if he needs
I've done that.
So Noah is listening. Hello, Noah. Go.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. And that guy, Tavon, who we tried to get to earlier but wasn't there, called back. So that's why I'm putting him up ahead. And we'll get to everybody that we can here in this hour or the next hour. It's the two best healthcare experts in the country join us for the entire program today. And we're going to make this show widely available as a public service. Tavon, go ahead.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys, first of all, you got a doctor on here that is not a medical doctor. He's doctors in engineering.
We said
but
that.
Everybody
no, hold on. No, wrong. No. Wrong. Wrong. That's wrong.
Wrong what? He's a medical doctor?
No, he's a health economist.
I am a health economist.
So what?
No, but Dr. Carroll is
a
medical doctor.
Yeah, he said
you majored in. That's like saying you majored in economy.
Yeah, but I majored in chemistry in college. That doesn't mean I'm not a doctor.
No, but you're wrong, Tavon. No. Hold on.
If you're not a doctor, I didn't say you weren't a doctor. I said you have a doctorate.
No. Listen. Let me clear this up. Let me clear this up, Tavon. I have Dr. Aaron Carroll. He has an MD, and he is a pediatrician and a health policy expert.
I'm a health services researcher. I have extra training in that field.
I have Austin Fracht, who has a PhD, yes, in electrical engineering, but he has about 75 other degrees. He is on many boards. He is a healthcare economist. So I thought that would be a great way to cover all of our bases. So let's not question anybody's credentials, but go ahead to your question, because it would be insane. And you would sound like a silly goose to question the credentials of the two people who every journalist in the country contacts for questions. That's why they're here. So ask them a question.
So going on that same scenario, just like whoever father that just called in with that scenario.
That was my dad.
It was your dad.
That was my dad.
Okay.
And I'm the host of the program. My name is Pete Dominic. I am a stand-up
comedian. What's your doctorate in?
All right. Your father with that scenario.
Yes.
But you guys on here want to start questioning three CPAs like you know better than they do. But now you're turning around saying don't question these guys you got on the show.
See, no. See, this is where it's a mistake. Like, my problem is like, if you had me and a cardiologist on and we were discussing how the heart works, just because I'm a doctor and I work in medicine does not mean that I know more about cardiology than the guy that does this for a living. I do this health policy, the research. That's what I do for a living. So just because someone else is a doctor does not mean that they perhaps might know more than me about the Affordable Care. Now, they might. But we're not on the equivalent footing about how does the Affordable Care Act work or how does health policy work. This is what we do. So if we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, just because someone's in the field, I don't necessarily believe that that means de facto that they know as much as I do about this issue.
The scenario that you laid out, you agreed that the company, that the guy, the business owner, would have to rearrange his business.
He could. That's one option, we said. Yes, one option. There were many options.
The main option.
No. The main option would. No. Nope. The main option would be that he raised the price of his food 2%. That is what I would suggest.
Everyone's going to have to. I'm a business owner.
Right.
Everyone has to do something like
that. No, they don't.
If they're in that scenario.
Yeah, if they're in that scenario, but that's not that. I hate to tell you, you're in the minority of Americans.
You don't think that's a bad thing when people are getting laid off left and right, where they have to go from full-time to part-time?
Why? So you're telling me that rather than – so this restaurant owner is threatening me that he's going to lay people off rather than raise the price of his food 2%.
First of all, that scenario – 50
million people uninsured is a bad thing.
That scenario with raising the price from some other scenario that you got about the 3%.
No, whatever it is,
that's necessarily apply to his business.
That's almost always the percent. In most businesses, the percent, payroll takes up the biggest costs.
I do.
Yeah, Austin does, and I have in the past, yes.
And yours is 3%? Everybody around the globe is 3%.
No, I didn't say that.
I said you're not listening.
I said the price that the penalty and or insurance could cost probably is in the single digits of percent of the cost. So in other words, that's what we're talking about, of revenue. So that's what prices, and probably you could raise it left, but that's probably the maximum amount you'd have. Even Papa John's, which is massive, said they'd have to raise their pizza price 11 cents. We're not talking. So if you're telling me you have to lay off tons of people because you can't raise your price of your pizza 11 cents, your pizza sucks.
All right. Well, here's because I'm going to have to run some hold waiting. I mean, got cut off the first time, but here's the thing. I know people that are, like I said, getting laid off, reduced to part time, family members, friends, my mother, Medicare people, everything's changed.
No, it's not. They're blaming
it.
You know what's wrong?
People.
Yeah, the economy is slowing down.
People.
I'm saying it's not because of the Affordable Care Act necessarily. The economy in the last few years stinks. The economy has been bad for some time. The people have been losing their jobs for a long time. It's happening around the world, and the Affordable Care Act's only happening here.
That's why all of a sudden now all these
really? That's why Greece has the worst unemployment it's ever had?
Hold on here.
It has nothing to do with the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, whatever you want to call it. Nothing to do with it. Huh?
No. Some changes in some businesses are. You're right. There probably are some companies that are shifting some people to part-time because they're making an economic decision. But to blame everybody you know who's being laid off or put to part-time or has lost their job or having an issue on the Affordable Care Act is not accurate because this is happening all over.
Right. No, it's not everybody. Of course, some people are going to, you know, just because of business, you know.
But a lot of people that are going to blame it on that.
Blame it on
Obamacare.
Blame it on Obamacare.
Yeah. But there's a big majority of businesses, and that's why they're
that's,
doing it.
But see, that okay, that's not
love,
true.
I would love for all this to work out and all everything be hunky-dory like you guys are making it seem. I really would, because I put myself on there. I really would. But from everything I've seen, that is not the case, and that's not going to work out the way you all are making it seem.
Well, full-time employment, full-time employment actually is up nationally, not down.
With part-time jobs. What do you get?
No. There are way more. Obviously, where you live is where all the part-time jobs are going up in the full. Because nationally, full-time employment's up.
All right, let
the
me
opposite of what you're saying.
Tavon, thank you. Chris in Ohio, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
The issue where you're talking about raising prices 2% works for some companies, for pizza makers, but I'm the director of a ambulance service.
Ugh.
The government regulates what Medicare is going to pay us for a trip, what Medicaid is going to pay us for a trip. Insurance companies pay us only so much. As you well know, the government is not giving counties the money they used to years ago. We're getting cut every year. So Medicare, Medicaid reimbursement is going down. The money we're getting to run the ambulance service is going down. But you're wanting to throw insurance prices on us to increase our costs.
Okay, I got to pause for 1 second, because this is what happens, I think, sometimes, is that, you know, we hear about everybody knows somebody, this is what. But let's take a breather and think about this. We have to remember, first of all, that the employer penalty in these decisions only applies to companies that have 50 or more people. Almost every company in the United States which has 50 or more people already provides insurance to their employees. So when you actually get down to the percentage of workers who work for large companies who don't already get insurance that are going to be affected by this, it's 1% of American workers. 1%. Now, we will hear from today, I'm sure, lots of callers who will say they know everyone's affected by this, but 1% of American workers fall into this category that we're talking about right now. So, yes, it's going to affect them. There's going to be a little bit of pain, in fact, a lot of pain for some people as we try to figure this out. But it's not the typical, as Chris Conover would put it, the typical story of how we're doing it. It is the minority. On the other hand, everybody in America gets new protections with respect to their insurance. Millions and millions and millions of people are going to get, you know, increased Medicaid, or they're going to get the exchanges. Lots of protections, lots of good things going on. And of those 1% of workers, lots of them are going to get insurance, or they will get to go to the exchanges and suddenly get insurance. But these growing pains are happening. There are trade-offs. No one should be under the impression that we cannot find an instance of someone who's going to be negatively affected by this. There will always be trade-offs. And I sympathize with them, and I would think we need to work it so that we minimize that pain. I think the employer penalty is a bad idea. I think right. You will find that most people, on wonks on both sides of the aisle, think the employer penalty is a bad idea. So let's have Congress get rid of it or fix it. No one will oppose that, probably in people writing articles or doing research. But that's not what the fight is about. You were having that fight on the radio, but all anybody talks about is repeal, not let's fix the employer. I think the employer penalty is a bad idea. I will say it vocally right now. I don't like it. I think it has bad incentives. I think it's a bad idea. We should absolutely fix it. But that's not the discussion that we're having nationally.
Chris.
Right. Why shouldn't we fix that before we impose this on people?
Well, it's not opposed. They just pushed it back a year. I bet it happens even again.
That
it
employer
has
penalty
back.
Has been pushed back a year, Chris.
Trying to get rid of the penalty.
It's not going to be enforced.
It's not happening in 2014.
There.
It's already been pushed back for the very reason you're calling about, because people are not sure what to do about it yet.
Chris?
Right. Okay, thank you.
I think we informed a lot of people right there with that one.
So.
We'll be back with healthcare economist Austin Pratt, healthcare policy expert, pediatrician, and medical myth debunker Dr. Aaron Carroll. We'll be right back. More calls.